You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Axe to grind. Yada yada, this, that, and the third. You're not going to make me drink toilet water. The Hardcore Podcast. I'm Patrick.
No, well, this is a patron. Oh, no.
No, this is a regular mainline, evergreen mainline. I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And we're readjusting as we begin recording.
You guys are both like...
I'm just lounging.
Yeah, you're lounging.
I'm lounging. I decided to lounge.
You're both looking to recline.
We're entering hour six of our recording block, basically. Yes. So big thank you to our sponsors, Run for Cover Records.
Hold on. I got to think of new sounds. What's a new sound?
Think of a theme, though. Go barnyard. Because I was going to say birds, but I think you've done birds.
Okay. So, wee.
So let me go. Run for cover.
Wee.
To live a lie. Death wish, Inc. Closed casket activities.
It was
are.
A goat.
What?
It was a goat.
Oh, it was a goat. Okay. We are revisiting a friend of ours. Oop.
Tom just went down hard.
Oh, good. I'm fine now.
Watch that cord.
That's it. I'm going to unplug everything. It's over, Johnny.
He's like, die.
Oh, it hurts.
Our friend Root Wilson's back in the building.
Oh, no,
he's
really?
He's come back. He wanted to get some more advice from you guys. You guys are...
He seemed so disinterested last
night. Yeah, I mean, he learned a lot, and he realized
TikTok
he's coming back.
Yeah. All right. Things didn't work out with that girl, I presume.
Well, we'll see. Who knows? Maybe it went good.
He made time for us.
In the same spirit that we did the ad read the last time Wilson was with us, the basics, we're going to go back and forth, but we're going to be quick.
Okay.
So do a more recent thing to share. Okay. A good introduction to our label sponsors. I'm going to do To Live a Lie, Spy, Habitual Offender, the new Spy record. It's awesome. They kind of took the same energy with which they started, which was that original demo, and I think they ramped it up. I'm a big fan. A great starting point of the fast hardcore that really borderlines on manic. Great representation of love. To Live Lie
watched catalog. A Spy video the other day. Very lit.
I think so. All right. Quickly. Patrick, do Run for Cover.
Okay.
I had Run for Cover.
Oh, too late.
Fuck.
A record that we've talked about a couple times, or a band that we've talked about because they have a new record out. But I'm going to go back to the first MacTaverScan record that Run for Cover put out, which I still think is one of the gems in that catalog. It's just well-written, kind of punk diffused. So this is like four levels away from punk, but not going into anything pop punk, just going into like a very kind of... aggressive indie, and just still stands up years later.
Ag indie, I like it. Tom, you've got Closed Casket Activities.
More recent thing we're saying?
More recent's cool.
I mean, you can go Age of Apocalypse, Grim Wisdom. What else would I go on here? We talked about Regional Justice Center. They put out an incredible record on...
Closed casket, right.
Closed kind of the casket diversity. Called Crime and Punishment. I would go for those two.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I would say those are both
Nice reflection of the current era. And with Deathwish, I'm going to break my own rule, and I'm going to just go classic.
Oh.
Because you went a different direction on Deathwish last time. And I think we put a lot of respect on their name, but if you want a good encapsulation of Deathwish, Blacklisted, Heavier Than Heaven, Lonelier Than God is a good place to start.
Great place to start.
If that's your Death Wish starting point, you're halfway done with the race. Let's say that.
That's true.
All right, yo. Hey, guys. It's Wilson.
Hey, Wilson. How
2 years
been?
Later.
Yeah, what's up? How you been?
Good. I'm new here. I have some questions for you.
You must have learned stuff in the last 2 years, Wilson.
Guys, I don't know if you know this, but time moves a little bit differently here in Westchester.
Oh, okay. Everybody that doesn't know, Wilson is a character played by Bob.
I'm merely a character.
Who is
Wilson Westchester from Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Who is the new guy who asks questions that... we presume that many of, or maybe most of our listeners know, but because of deficits in everybody's understanding of everything, many will not know. And it could be someone's first episode.
Right. And we'll do, this is back to basics too.
Back to basics.
We will, in the future, we'll do like Clarissa explains it all style. Mm. Like, you know, we'll be Patrick and Tom explain it all.
Like a talking cat and stuff.
Mm, yes. Guys.
Is that the same show?
No, Sabrina.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Yeah. Same actress?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Correct. Melissa Joan Hart.
That's
yes.
Right.
She has a shot glass collection.
Good for her.
Interesting.
Remember that from her Cribs.
Mm. Spoiler.
Cribs is a good show.
She definitely doesn't live there anymore. She definitely had to move. She downsized. Now she's in Santa Clarita.
She's got a nice condo in Riverside. What is street punk?
Oh, fuck, man. Okay.
Skinhead music?
More
melodic, very pub oriented. Has a lot of Irish and English overtones.
I think all that's fair.
Because street punk and oi is hey Bob, clarify this.
Cousins.
Right, this ain't different.
Street punk different maybe dress. Is a little broader, but yeah, it's kissing cousins. You might get a little bit of spiky punk seeping into your oi. Like street punk is where spiky punk and oi meet.
That's okay. I acknowledge the kissing cousins, but oi is like so much. People that love oi seem to only love oi. I don't know what that is. So I separate them a little bit, but like, yeah, they're kissing cousins. Here's the thing, Wilson. You definitely came to the wrong guy because I think most of this music is Party City Punk that is not, at this point, cosplay. That doesn't mean it's not good songs because these are like at their core, these are roots rock songs that are all very likable. You like, oi is almost difficult to fuck up because it is, you just take the most basic elements of a rock song, which is a good riff with a sing alongable chorus.
Right. And, say some words that Americans don't understand,
and then
you're good.
You're not even expected to have the other elements of a song. You're not even expected, like...
No,
like,
the verses are fucking negligible. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And honestly, like, a clever bridge? Don't waste our time.
Yeah, just get to the thing that I could sing at a soccer game.
So it's almost hard to fuck up, but at the same time, very difficult to master because writing a chorus that is incredibly memorable might be the most difficult thing in music.
Right.
Mm. So... But
what would you go for? What would be your go-to for a street punk band as compared to an oi band?
Mm.
I have one, Bob.
Go for it.
Become Bob for a second.
Yes.
Anti-heroes?
Oh, sure.
Where do they fall? Street punk more than oi, right?
Yeah, and it's sort of like... right. Like, for example, the Ducky Boys would probably be street punk, not oi.
Right, yes. Oxymoron.
Okay. Oxymoron's more
Showcase
punk.
Showdown.
Yep. So it's more...
Casualties? Or are they just
no,
punk?
Spiky punk. So, yeah.
Anti-heroes fall, because they're not oi necessarily.
No, they're not. They're...
You ever hear the story about that, dude?
No. Which story? I mean, I've heard many stories about the anti-heroes, actually.
They're actually... They're often mislabeled.
Have a couple EPs that are really good. Really good.
They have a song called Jerry Was a Piece of Shit about Jerry Garcia.
Mm-hmm,
great song.
Yes.
But they were kind of mislabeled as a racist band, which they're not.
That's correct.
Are you going to talk about that? Happens to all of these bands over time.
Right. I mean, because the fans that come out to their fucking shows. But also, so, Wilson, there was a movie about 20 years ago that made every person I know an Edward Norton fan called American History X.
Oh, they liked him because he was a Nazi.
And he was built in a Nazi. Like, it was like everyone fell in love with Fairuza Balk as a skinhead girl, and everyone fell in love with Ed Norton as a skinhead.
I think I liked Fairuza Balk as a goth.
As a craft. As a witch.
Yeah.
Sure.
Bless.
So They all play Nazis. The guy, what's his name? The dude that lost all that weight. Boy Meets World guy.
Fuck.
Evan.
We'll call him Evan Seinfeld.
It's not Evan Seinfeld.
I know, but it's fun.
What's his name? Like, let's respect on his name. Dude lost like 300 pounds.
All right.
Boy Meets World.
I'm just going American History X. Hold on. I'm tight.
Evan Taubenfeld?
No.
Damn it. Oh, that's an artist. Evan Taubenfeld had a song called Boy Meets World.
Okay.
Maybe it's not Evan.
No, listen. It is Ethan Suplee.
Ethan Suplee.
Yeah, lost like 300 pounds.
Plays a Nazi in the movie. Has the anti-hero's logo tattooed on his forearm.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not very helpful.
So
this is the
everyone's like
good.
Nazis. Anti-heroes sue the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Get a shit ton of money.
I think rightfully.
Rightfully so. The dude from the anti-heroes, I learned this on White Trash Rob's podcast, took some of that money and helped get bodies home, Vietnam soldiers home.
Yes.
Was able to reunite these soldiers that were buried over in with their families back in the States.
That is a very specific and anachronistic
very
charity.
Makes sense though for that like kind of they're an American pride band.
I know, but how old are they?
Anti-heroes? Yeah. 90s.
I mean, they're probably
in their
50s.
They were on the older side. Yeah.
But they look, I'm not. I think that's a nice thing to do.
You know many people who have very niche, specific interests, and
like
then
cats with
live their
toes.
Lights around it. Like,
but yeah, but, I, but I'm just saying.
I know.
Many of them don't like. If we were 50, Vietnam would still not be terribly relevant.
They're a band. They're a POW MIA shirt band.
Okay, yes, all right.
And their fans are as well. So okay, yeah, he used some of his means.
Yeah,
to get.
I mean, look, cool. it's a nice thing
very,
to do.
Very cool.
I'm not mad at him at
but
all.
There's some records that I think people would be into.
I strongly agree. I think anti-heroes are lost to the sands of time in a weird way.
It sounds like Sam Kinison singing for a punk band.
Is that appealing? Also, we're talking to Wilson. Does he know who?
Well, now
Wilson's
back.
Okay. No. All right. What's the Sam Kinison? All right. So street punk. So just a yes or no, geezers. Is street punk good?
No.
Broadly, no.
Okay. I've been thinking about the 80s hardcore that we've talked about. An old man friend of my uncle said that he liked ska back in the 80s. Is 80s ska worth checking out?
Fucking yes.
Yes.
Okay, tell
fucking
me about this.
Yes.
Is that also a part of hardcore?
No.
It's skinhead music.
But yes, look, all of this falls under the rubric of punk, whatever. Also, is Wilson on perks? Is this what the kids are like? I feel like Wilson.
I'm trying to give an authentic presentation of Wilson.
Yeah, like, okay, don't right. change your voice, no matter how sad or excited you are.
Yeah.
And be a true right. Gen Zer.
Right, I'm gonna go like, full on with it on the next question. But is 80s ska worth checking out? And where do you start and where do you put them?
Okay, hold on. I want to make sure I got my 80s.
I mean, the specials are 80s, right?
Start in the 70s.
Start
and then
in the
70s.
What?
The
big, but
yeah.
No, our House is an 80s song.
Okay.
Is that specials?
No.
Yeah, Madness.
No.
Madness, sorry. Poser, Tom.
It's okay. No,
it's fine.
Great song.
Dylan Love Ska.
We'll let you live.
Operation Ivy. Ska punk 80s.
Ska punk.
And 80s. Great.
Yes.
Amazing.
Actually,
did you guys see the Op Ivy video?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
I have stuff to say.
Say. While he's getting his answer for Wilson, let's talk Op Ivy. So for people who don't know, Op Ivy did a low-key, one-song kind of...
Which apparently they've done before, and people are like, why is everyone freaking out?
I think because...
They've done this several times.
Because the Op Ivy, like, there might be a full reunion, is in the water.
Right, so, yeah.
So everybody's kind of waiting for that to actually happen. So there was some sort of ska event happening in Southern California.
You know what it was? So it was somebody's birthday party. Because I was like, why does this look like it's in the back in someone's backyard?
Mm-hmm.
So it was someone's birthday party.
Yeah.
The Interrupters and Lint from mm-hmm. Rancid / Operation Ivy are playing as the backing band for the Specials.
Right, right. That's right.
Eric Andre brings Jesse Michaels to the show.
So much going on here.
They decide to do Sound System.
Mm-hmm.
So now the Interrupters, who are like the a machine of a band,
mm-hmm. yeah.
as for Scott, like they're like the best backing band you can have.
Yep. Of course.
Tim, who's dressed in a suit, baggy suit, fucking, you know.
He's ready.
And Tim's the fucking, I think he's cool, like cool shit, are playing. They bring out Jesse Michaels, who to me,
mm-hmm.
it looks like it's the last night of the company retreat.
That's exactly what the video looks
and
like.
And the CEO is like, nah, I'm cool. I used to be in a band.
It's a casual day, guys.
Yeah, like, he comes out and he's like, I'm going to sing you a song.
That's what I liked about the video, to be honest.
At first, he was just like, I'm white-knuckling this microphone, and like, I don't want them to see me too fucked up because I'm a CEO. Towards the end, he starts jumping around and stuff, and it gets good.
Yeah.
They sound awesome.
Yep.
But it was a little awkward, if I may be so bold.
Okay.
Oh. I think
it didn't look like they're like, oh, look, the CEO took off the suit and he put on his fucking.
No, you nailed it. But like, but it's up to your mileage may vary on if that's lit or not.
I mean, I thought it sounded awesome. And I'm like, yo, I will go to Chicago for Riot Fest tomorrow if they announce this to hear that fucking whole record, that whole discography.
That record is so good.
It's perfect.
It's so good.
It's perfect.
No question.
Catch me crying during fucking sad, whatever. Like, you know, like Bombshell.
So okay, I'm looking at a list of 80s ska bands. There's a trillion of them. I'm just going to list a couple.
What about Dancehall Crashers? Are they considered 80s?
Great. Yes.
No doubt.
And so is Mighty Mighty Bosstones, who were around throughout the entire 80s, but then really didn't break until 90s. I mean, in any way.
Yeah.
But okay, so Wilson.
Mm.
What's interesting about ska is that this third wave ska almost has all of it that is good has some other influence to make it, to spice it up and make it interesting. Because if you wanted ska, you could go a generation earlier and find a better version of that.
A more pure version. Yeah.
I would say better. So,
I think so too.
But then you could go a lot of different places here.
I mean, do you want to talk with ska?
Give your peaks.
Do you want to explain what ska is to Wilson?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What is ska?
I mean, it's a Jamaican offshoot of reggae.
It's an offshoot of reggae, and it is very specifically played. When you deviate from it, some fans get mad. Same thing with reggae. So here's an interesting thing, Wilson. Mm. Some styles of music are purely template-based. You could make the argument for stuff like rock having verse, chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, outro, or chorus, or verse. Yeah. However, with reggae, there's an actual way that you're supposed to play it, right? And these rhythms are things that are there's almost no stealing in it, right? Because it's in blues, it's a similar phenomenon,
right? Yes.
When you vary that up with other elements, you end up with something that's third wave is what. So
what they call it. So let's hear it.
So Bosstones, can't go wrong. Mephistopheles, not a bad choice. Operation Ivy, cannot go wrong.
Yep.
Fishbone adds a lot of different elements. A
lot of funk in there.
Lot of different elements. But they have two fantastic fucking records that I think a 20-year-old, more than Dog Eat Dog, which a 20-year-old may not understand at all, I think Fishbone is timeless. So I think that's worth considering.
Okay. So you're saying the reality of my surroundings
before. And what is the fucking one that's just the...
The Hey Mon Pa.
Yeah.
Is it just Fishbone? I mean, it's self-titled?
It
I don't remember.
Self-titled. It's fucking awesome. Let's see. And then you could go... Suicide Machines, I'm not as familiar with as some of their contemporaries.
I'm not big on Suicide Machines, and I think of them as being more 90s. They might have started in the 80s.
That's the thing. Yeah. A lot of these bands did not break until the proper explosion.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
But
more on the punk side of punk ska.
Yeah, I to be honest,
Suicide Machines was described recently in a ska chat I had as ska without horns.
Yeah, okay, so that's what a lot of people say.
That's
very,
all hardcore.
Very minimal horns, right? Yeah, like, yeah. Okay. So, no doubt, but I don't think anybody's listening to the material from this era.
Very few. And you get a little bit of funk infusion there, too.
Truth and Soul is the other Fishbone record.
Truth and Soul. Truth and Soul is my preference. Listen to that one, Wilson. Yeah, so many good songs. Big D and the Kids Table is listed as 80s. No, they formed in 95. Thank you. Get this the fuck out of here.
This list sucks.
Yeah, this list sucks.
Dancehall Crashers were great.
Yep, okay.
I don't love ska, but I love Dancehall Crashers.
And you like Inspector 7. 92. I do like Inspector 7. This is a fraud.
Later. Yeah, that's later.
This is a fraud. Later. Yeah. So what's the Moon Ska era? It's got to start in the 80s, right?
It's 78, isn't it?
No, Moon Ska, like the New York stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Moon early 90s, probably.
Early 90s, okay.
Early 90s, late
they had their own record 80s. Store.
Yep.
Yeah.
They had a Moon Ska record store. And they had like a clothing shop. What was the other place?
Two-Tone?
Double XL. No, not XL.
Shout out Two-Tone in Jersey.
Hey, mom.
Okay, so you say I should check out Ska from the 80s. All right.
Yeah, you really should.
All right, cool. All right. Questions. I think...
Wilson, you're getting too excited.
I know. Sorry, hold on. So, what...
Toasters.
Oh, the toasters. There you go. That's a good one. I always wanted like toasters more than I did.
That's how everybody feels, but they're reliably.
Yeah, they had a more glowing sound. Like their guitars were really kind of like bright and cheery.
You know what we have to do after this?
What's that?
You know what we have to do after this?
Tell us.
When we're done, we're gonna go get lunch.
Okay.
Mm. We're gonna put on the Reality My Surroundings, windows down,
blast,
drive towards the beach for
love it.
Okay. 5 minutes so I can listen to Everyday Sunshine with the beach going on.
We'll get some good energy. What recent hardcore band should I check out if I like metal?
Oh, yeah, your options are endless. Okay, if you're into more, what would you say?
Like rappy stuff? I think you'd go Incendiary. Fucking asshole. I would say Incendiary, Knocked Loose.
Well, I was going to say, but Knocked Loose puts you in a position, right? I was thinking Knocked Loose was my first answer.
Sure.
But then I was going to say there's an interesting thing with Knocked Loose because, yes, there's plenty of metal inside Knocked Loose, but I think that you I don't think it's Lamb of God metal. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I think it's a different thing.
But if you're looking for hardcore metal.
Yeah. Okay, sure. I'm just trying to think, like, what do you think we could ask him? But what do you think Knocked Loose's metal influences are?
Stuff that we'd be like, really? Like
that's what I'm saying.
Like a Muir.
Oh, really? I was going to say, like, I bet
maybe Metallica, Lamb of God.
But I think they probably listen to more, at this point.
Like Meshuggah?
More Meshuggah, more Periphery, or these acts that I don't give a fuck about. But, like, I think that that's probably more of an influence than,
Metallica.
Know. Yeah, Metallica, although Lamb of God, or Big Room.
Killswitch Engage.
Killswitch Engage, thank you. So.
Big Room Metal.
Those are good options. Certainly, almost any young brother attached act is going to have some
You'll like God's Hate if you like heavy stuff.
Yeah, but this. Hold on, let's think metal.
That's metal.
I know, yes. But like that's more like soccer chant metal. I'm talking about like give me.
Soccer chant metal.
Give me proper. Give me.
I hope Nate heard that and fucking soccer.
It's a compliment. I like their records. Give me.
Like a metalcore band?
Yeah, give me like a proper...
Dying Wish.
Perfect example. That's proper, go.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is... Wow, that was right out of that. Wilson. Way to stay current, man. what is... Age of Apocalypse band we talk about all the time.
Metal.
Those are not necessarily of the moment contemporary metal influences, but I think that you also hear those. You know what I mean? Yes. Like,
See You Space Cowboy.
Okay. Are we looking for CU Space Cowboys influences? Is that what you're asking, Wilson?
I mean, I'm thinking if you're someone getting into hardcore, metal.
Sure.
I mean, Wrist Meets Razor, too.
Yes.
Yeah, Wrist Meets Razor for sure. CU Space Cowboys is Wilson. Very interesting band.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I agree.
I think that they, their aesthetic is going for like a simulacra of a sassy 90s thing, right? But really, I think their influence is the mid-2000s sex.
Yes.
And also like the post Converge influence on everything. So Wilson in CU Space Cowboy, you actually see the convergence of every guitar kind of chaotic guitar part music of the last 15-20. You know what I mean? Kind of an interesting band in that way.
Okay.
Okay.
Why do some bands have more than one singer? Are there any good ones?
Path of Resistance, yes. Who else we got?
Oh, simultaneously, I mean.
I don't know what that is.
Okay.
Why do bands have more than one singer?
At one time, it was popular in punk music, right? And it was, I couldn't tell you if that more or less started with the Crass scene, but it seemed to at least bloom out of that. That a lot of times, maybe in the interest of what's the other E? You've got anarchy, and then on the other end, equality.
The equality.
You would often have peace punk bands with both
male and female
male
singers.
And female right. singers. That was popular for a long time. Then when you started getting into stuff like Oi or street punk, you often had shared vocal responsibilities to a sure. very large degree.
Sometimes hardcore bands start in high school and they have two friends that want to sing that don't know how to play instruments.
You know what, Wilson? Strip everything I just said out of this conversation. That's the answer.
I mean, that's a lot of it, right? Yeah, it's kind of like...
That's the answer. Very few bands that go on past...
demos have two singers.
Yeah.
So, Tom, are there any good ones?
Any good
two singer?
There's a band called No Redeeming Social Value. A lot of fun. They sing songs about mostly drinking. They have two singers. Pretty fun.
People enjoy the Scarhead record.
Scarhead. Particularly to me, the height of Scarhead was the Ezak Puerto Rican Mike generation.
Okay.
Mm. At least live.
Mm-hmm.
Scarhead's good. I'm trying to think of people because I can think of bands with like, you know, a singer and a guitar player that sings.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of like two people up front with microphones.
Yeah, there was the band from the Carolinas that had two records.
Code 7.
Thank you.
But Dave wasn't in it for a while.
Yeah, they lost a singer.
Set Your Goals had two singers?
Yep.
That's accurate.
Three when Haley jumps in there.
That's right. Let's go.
Blind Society from New Jersey. A skinhead singer and a punk singer.
Wow.
Bring them U-N-I-T-Y. Together,
man. Yeah. This one's for the punks and the skins.
Wow.
I'm going to say that at my next show.
You should.
I mean, Self-Defense has had two singers.
But you've never... Have you performed together?
Yes, we have.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Duet style. But I actually love two singers. It's not very popular. It doesn't look good on a stage very often. And many people in the last 20 years find it very tacky.
You have to be really talented to make it work. And the songs have to work.
Yeah, or just have a guitar player.
Path of Resistance, just two singers or more than?
Four.
Three, yeah, right. There's a lot.
So Bar Fight, more than, many singers. Okay, so we'll
you know what? What's Minority Unit band with singers?
Oh yeah, Minority Unit, excellent, good one. Yeah,
a lot of fun.
The first iteration of Nausea,
yes.
Is that right?
Yep, yeah. Neil and Amy. Yeah.
And
Nausea has a very good Instagram presence if you want to follow them,
which is awesome that exists.
Yeah, it is amazing
because now it's like it's like, oh, here's like punked out Amy, and now she's like a psychologist, she's a PhD, like brilliant. It's fucking awesome.
So, the two singer thing, Wilson, I hope it makes a comeback. I think it's incredibly fun, but it takes two real performers, and you don't often find that.
Right, and you have to keep that energy.
Yes.
It has to match.
Yeah, 100%.
Because you can't be, you know, well, I mean, Avail.
Okay.
If you want to count Bobo. Mm.
Oh, and that brings an interesting question. Is Bob here. Do we count bands who have... primary singer, but then a significant amount of backing vocals.
Well, that's the thing. So, like, Blood for Blood,
right?
Blood for Blood, I would count
as two singers.
I would.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right, because it looks less
Cold
awkward
because
it's a guitar player.
Yes,
Cold World, not quite.
But no, I mean, some of the, I mean, some of those songs are mostly Alex.
Yeah, and then there's songs that Nick sings. Now it's, but it's because but it's live, not primary. Yeah. It's not quite, and because when they perform, it's not a must that they those components have to be included.
Well, speaking of, what about Title Fight?
Two singers,
but instruments, so it makes it less weird.
So it's less front.
Hot Water Music does that. It's yeah.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Okay, that's good.
Pat is now doing steps in front of me.
He if you watch Seinfeld, his phone doesn't go crazy.
When the gentleman is training Jerry, like the old man training Jerry.
I'm the old man?
That's what Pat looks like right now.
Are there any oi bands I need to check out to better understand hardcore?
Oh, that's kind of a that's a different question than I expected.
Yeah, that's too informed for this.
For Wilson. For
sometimes Wilson has some deeper things.
Honestly?
He's a thinker.
The Business?
Okay.
Cox Bar.
But Tom, you're just naming the best.
But, I mean, the Business played here more with Madball and Warzone.
Yes.
Than they ever played with oi bands here.
Okay, that's
and vice versa in Europe.
Okay, let me say this. To understand hardcore broadly, no.
No.
To understand hardcore in the 2020s, maybe, because oi is like becoming a thing.
I mean, think about how many bands that kind of it influenced Shatterer.
Okay, yep.
Influenced Murphy's Law.
You know what? I take it back.
Influenced Sick of It All. Right. Influenced AF.
I take it back.
Influenced Judge.
Yeah, I mean, fucking Blitz.
I take it back. You
right, was that a Blitz cover?
Yes.
Yes.
Right? Poser. I'm one of my
no,
posers.
No, you're totally right.
Yeah. No, I take it back. You're right. Because the influence on New York. I always think of New York as being entirely too fast, but
that,
they all
like vocally like oh,
and they literally all ended up there. They yes. at least all had.
That's
a period.
How they all yeah. had an oi
yeah,
period.
Yeah, you're
yeah.
not wrong.
Or a street punk period. Very.
Yep.
Kiss and Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I agree with Tom. The Business certainly, and Cox Bar, just because that's like you're not getting out of that.
Yeah, maybe check out some of those No Future EP collections.
Mm.
Okay. Who is the best band who's completely unoriginal?
Oh, fuck. I found, this is no disrespect. This is going to get
that's
me.
This is a mad disrespectful question.
I found,
Wilson's a mad disrespectful kid from Westchester.
I found nothing original about Down to Nothing, and I thought that they were exceptional at being that.
But you know what, though? All right, so you say that.
Uh-huh.
Great fun band, man. Like one of the most fun.
I think in their moment, one of the best live acts in hardcore.
Name their influences, because I feel like Turnstile was more influenced by them than they were influenced by anything before them.
Oh, I think Turnstile.
Who do you, so
certainly
who's Down to Nothing
takes a lot from that DNA.
Think about it, Bob. Can bring it back.
Yes.
Don't you feel like that? I mean, Down to Nothing.
DTN's influences.
It was one of those things
diverse,
that weren't
yeah.
doing. They weren't reinventing
well, I
the
guess
wheel.
Not, yeah. Okay. They're not stealing anything directly. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Same like TUI.
Okay.
Same like No Warning. It's like this feels familiar, but I cannot pick out. There are bands that go like, oh, dude, this is like the remake of Psycho. It's like
it.
A shot for
it.
Shot.
I get it. So we're
but
looking,
then there's No Warning. It's like, oh, this is very based on Breakdown, Cro-Mags, but it doesn't sound like anything.
We're looking for something like Saves the Day is to Lifetime.
Correct. Or okay. or like, you know,
I mean, that might
Discharge
be
great, but man, have you heard Disclose?
Okay.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
All the disbands that came yeah, after, right. like Disfear.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I have a, Bob has an answer.
Okay, yeah. I'd love to hear from Bob.
If you look at their influences, it almost feels unfair to say it's completely unoriginal, and I think it isn't completely unoriginal. But Tragedy wears their influences like a badge of honor, and they maybe just did Amoebix better than Amoebix. And they maybe just took Discharge and did it really well. Like, they just did that sound to the best of the ability. I guess maybe that's not completely unoriginal, but you know what I mean? Like, they
but can you pick out parts?
So
that's the thing. Like I feel like
there's no straight lifting or like even like they took. So I guess maybe that's not fair because Tragedy took like Neurosis and Amoebix and threw in some Discharge and threw in a blender and so they came up with their own thing. So maybe not that.
That sounds exactly right. And what I think is interesting about that, and we could talk about it in a larger way, is that, and this is an idea for an episode, bands that take an outsider's idea of a thing and do it perfectly.
Yeah.
Tragedy is perfect at that, like, whatever, if we want to call that crust and whatever.
Yeah.
So, it, but as an outsider, when I hear, like, so I'm not a crustman. When I hear tragedy, I go, perfect.
This
crust.
Is the best perfect version of it. But in reality, if you're looking for crust, like, that don't sound like nausea.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? That don't sound like a lot of crust before it, but to me, that's the idealized version.
Exactly.
And there's something there, too, with the outsider's version of it versus the idea of perfection versus what is that world actually thinking? Everybody loved tragedy.
That's the thing. And tragedy is a great example of meeting a four-quadrant band. You know what I mean? Like, met the in-group idea of it, right? They loved it. Then you had the adjacents, so like people that loved hardcore but didn't know anything about crust loved it.
You know what I mean? And that brought then, to them to it, right?
So I think, well, whatever, we could talk about tragedy a lot. But the
the completely unoriginal. So like somebody who took someone else's idea, someone who copied someone's homework, just maybe did it as well or better. Tom, tell me if this is unfair. Did Raw Deal take the breakdown demos and just do it a little better?
You know what?
It's not the same. I'm hesitant to say
because it's so close.
And it's same dude. So that's why this isn't a diss. That's why it's not a fucking diss.
Right. It's also not a diss if you could do it better.
And by the way, I won't say it, but Breakdown and Rod Deal's Killing Time are
neck and neck.
Yeah. Yes. 1A, 1B.
I mean,
you pick which one.
I can name a few, but there's no over. Like, I feel like the bands that are like shot for shot remakes, they're cool. They don't like stand the test of time.
Well, so Saves the Day to Lifetime is a good question. There are people who will tell you they like Saves the Day more than Lifetime.
I mean,
yeah, many thousands.
Yeah. But I mean, I think like there's like
and it's not
said,
a total straight shot for shot, right?
I mean, those first two records are pretty embarrassing.
Well, it's lifted, but like what?
Saves the Day, Incendiary.
Okay. Right.
It's lifted.
Yeah.
But it's their own thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think for Saves the Day, they lifted it. They never hit the speed that Lifetime did. Obviously, vocals are different between the two. But yeah, no. So like that's what I think when we say.
Well, here's a band that wears like their influences on their sleeves and just did a mashup. To me, one of the best bands of this millennium, Foundation.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're Turmoil and Indecision.
You know, but I think I agree.
I also hear Trial in there. Trial. I'm talking about like
vocally.
I think a one to one.
Because you identify the same thing as me that I did with Tragedy. Foundation's Blender Band.
Yes.
They took those, they put it in the blender.
But you can still tell the ingredients.
And maybe you like bananas and you like kiwis and you like pineapple.
Sounds awesome. When
you put all three in a blender, maybe you like that smoothie more than the sum of the parts.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Obviously, they're the biggest band of all the bands that were influenced.
Well, and so that's another episode is blender bands, and we identify the pieces of the whole.
But I think you can still taste very definitive pieces of all three.
I agree with that.
Like, but no warning. I don't think you hear, like, it's Madball, Outburst, Cro-Mag, all New York stuff, but you don't go, that's a fucking Biohazard part.
No.
But it's all it sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
But it sounds like nothing of those bands that they're influenced by.
Oh, and another thing that will distinguish is Bitter End, we say, is like this classical New York sound, but it's not completely unoriginal. They really do something with it.
I also think that it has so many different New York sounds.
Yes, they
so many.
Are able to, correct.
Yeah, Madball, Biohazard.
They do a lot of different stuff.
Leeway's in there. I think there's a lot.
Cro-Mags are in there, but not the Cro-Mags you might think they'd pull to. I also think, a band who we don't talk about too often, but I think actually probably deserves a little credit. Like, that band No Tolerance pulls directly from Confront and Brotherhood. And somewhat unapologetically, though, I hear a little bit more New York hardcore on their LP, maybe some Agnostic Front influence in there.
Mm.
So I think that's not there. I'm thinking, okay, you know where we could look is to more of the Youth Crew stuff. Some of that stuff is pretty unapologetic about it.
I mean, we should just text, you and I should text Paul, and because he's been in bands that are like, yes, I'm trying to
do
this Youth Crew demo.
Yes.
I just,
what's the it's not Sinking Ships.
No,
the other band.
There's Sinking
Shook
Ships.
Ones?
Shook Ones.
Shook Ones.
Okay, yeah. Shook Ones.
Kid Dynamite.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Well done.
And I prefer Shook Ones, so but
very well done.
Preference.
Yeah. And they, as they go along their career, they start pulling in some more influences, and you can hear it a little bit more, but certainly their first record, 16.
By the way,
it's very good.
Lost at the moment, but yeah. So many of our listeners who are not familiar with Shook Ones
would love them. A superior live act. And if you could, I had heard them and was like, this is good, this is really catchy, and I had some friends in Southern California who liked them, and then I saw them play Sync with Cali Fest 2005, and they arguably had the best reaction of the day. Wow. But they inarguably had the most infectious, the entire room was just glowing and buzzing. Like, there was a couple other reactions were just as big and an active participant, but the entire room felt like they were, you know, it was walking on sunshine after that. It was just high energy, that kind of thing where you go, oh yeah, this is a band I want to watch again, you know. Highly recommend that first LP, 16. And I mean, I love the record they did on Rev, and I love the record after that, but that first LP is like cool and impressive in a funny way. All right.
You know how different your brain has to work to place vocals the way that he does? Like, none of them are intuitive assumptions to me. Like, it's right. Not how I would sing, ever.
Right, which
and
is cool.
Yeah. I think it's so neat. Just shout out to Scott. He put some respect on his name.
Yeah, he might be a respect on his name episode. That's an, all right, guys. Cool. Okay, thanks. That was a good answer. Is there a musical appeal to Beatdown, or is it just the vibe / the lyrics?
Yeah, it's the second one.
You think it's just the vibe and the lyrics?
Yeah, the music's ass.
Okay. Tom.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to hear anything. Like, it's more the vibe or like the live like chaos in a set of that kind of music. I personally don't like. It's not something you put on at home by yourself.
No, but I should be a little bit more fair. The trick of good beatdown is the trick of, as we were discussing, like something like reggae or ska.
Mm.
It's you are in the most.
You're in the format.
You're so in the format, you're confined, and it's what can you do in that format. And the magic of good beatdown, actually, now you got me really fucking thinking. The magic of good beatdown.
Jesus Christ, yeah. The magic of good beatdown. It's Patrick's new cereal.
The magic of
BDOs.
Good beatdown is, you know, firstly, we got to talk about your ability to acronym things on the fly. It's very impressive.
Thank you.
I watched those Charlie Sheen interviews the other day. Yes. He does it in milliseconds.
Me and Mr. Sheen, a lot alike.
Like, I'm so
Tiger's
impressed.
Blood, Tiger blood, man.
Brothers.
You got tiger blood. So,
I'm not saying I don't.
It's just impressive. My brain doesn't work like that.
We're good.
Okay, so the magic of good beatdown is, and I know this from a guy who was a hired gun for one of the big sort of idiot bands like that.
Mm-hmm.
He was writing a new record with them. And he said, it's harder than you think, man. And I said, really? It's fucking stupid. And he goes, do you know how difficult it is in the post-Hatebreed, everything has been done
era. Yeah.
To do a good mosh part that your audience has not heard.
That isn't just straight up plagiarized.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And like, that's if you can do that as a beatdown band, there's a problem-solving musicianship to it that
sure,
I think
that's
is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, it's largely still ass, but you know.
But it's when it's done well, it's cool.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Do you guys? And this is now Bob speaking. Do you guys have a for the average hardcore listener? A like, yo, look, I'm not going to say that Beatdown's going to be for you, but if you haven't checked out one of these heavier records, what is one that you would say maybe check this out?
I mean, you got to go Bulldoze, right?
You can do that, but I think
that's their original.
No, but for a kid, somebody
who's a 22 ears, you know what I mean?
I bet stuff like Laid to Rest makes total sense to
for sure.
I'm sure World of Pain.
Oh, World of Pain, sure. Yeah, like these are the acts that are kind of like we could never accuse them of necessarily elevating. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's their goal. Those are both acts that are like trying to refine.
Who's the European band? The European beatdown band.
Nasty.
Nasty.
Oh, I actually I wish that I liked Nasty because I think Nasty is very fun.
Yes.
But it is nouveau beatdown.
Yes.
And I have a hard time with
As opposed to trad beatdown.
Yeah, I'm a trad beatdown guy. So like World of Pain and Laid to Rest make a lot more sense to my ear.
It's just that it's that classical
trad beatdown. Style.
Yeah, like I'm trad.
He's a beatdown Karen over here. Like,
wants, I'm telling other people
he wants to
beatdown.
Speak to your nouveau beatdown manager. So all right.
Have you guys listened to Nasty? Like the drum sound is so fucking like it's way too bright, way too like.
Is it like triggers and stuff?
Yeah, but like it almost sounds past that. It to me, it's just like the whole recording is too mechanical sounding. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus. Or, are they going to say it? Yes, vegan and veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring, maybe gardening. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. That is the type of meal I prefer. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Now, I'd like you to head to factormeals.com/axetogrind50. That's numeral 50, and use code AXETOGRIND50, that's numeral 50, to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's insane. That's code AXETOGRIND50 at factormeals.com/AXETOGRIND50. That's to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Crazy.
Can you explain 25 to life to me?
Sure. Band of their generation.
Hold on. Tom is pausing a little bit more, and I feel like he should be able to answer this question much better. But go ahead and start us off, Patrick.
Okay. A band that started as a thing or made themselves a thing and kind of ended as a joke.
There was a time.
Yes, this that, is what I that, thank you for put. Thank you for the honesty, Tom.
There was a time that 25 to Life, was the biggest non-victory hardcore band. How's that?
Thank you,
Is that a fair?
I'm not denying your.
It's
your
legitimate
purview of reality.
Mm, thank you.
Because I mean, there was a time, huge. I mean, not that we necessarily. I mean. I like some of it. I'm not going to lie. I was around for it, and I was a kid. I was like...
Yo, Tom, honestly, I forget who played it. It must have been Eric. Played it for me the other day. There are parts that actually work, man. You did Rick's voice before, and that's, in my mind, how I remember Rick's voice. 100%.
And it's not really like that.
It got to that.
The early stuff...
It was fake Roger. He was trying to be Roger.
Yeah, and
right.
Actually,
and then he became parody Roger.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, pretty hard.
Keeping It Real, the record, is a pretty hard record.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I was revisiting it recently. I was like, yo, yeah. There's something going on here. Now, here's the problem with 25 to Life. Frequent member changes. Singer now is understood to be having his struggles and an erratic person. But even back then, there was a certain instability to every lineup. Is that fair?
Oh yeah.
I would say that anybody who wants to tell me they weren't a thing
are lying.
They might just have missed the moment in the same way that somebody could tell me Outbreak wasn't a thing.
Right, just not being a part of the scene. That
right, right, you know right. I mean? But if you were around during that time, you begrudgingly have to admit that they were a thing.
Yes. So now musically, what is it? Well, that's kind of actually confusing because it's New York.
Wait, isn't it 90s New York hardcore?
It is.
But unlike anything else.
And it also as it degrades, yeah. Well, actually, ton of leeway in that.
See, I don't hear that. I hear some weird like Slayer almost.
Okay, that's fine. But like the I hear a lot of metal. Sure,
I mean it misses the melodicism of leeway.
Okay. I'll give it. That's
a lot of. Blah, 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 blah,
but that's what I'm looking for, like the most leady of New York stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It has some of that. And the. But as it degrades as a band, becomes just pure kind of shit 90s crunch. Is that fair?
Mm. Yeah.
And but they're. I would say that they have an era that is actually very capable, representative. 90s hardcore,
tough guy, New York hardcore.
Yes, yeah. That's your answer, Wilson.
Okay.
I mean, current people like them, so we don't. We're not you know, finding this artifact. There's a whole generation of people that like misspell things and like talk about like one scene unity.
Is there a 25 to life?
Yes, Assance. Absolutely. Fucking.
The Assance has been. We're ensconced in the Assance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Life is beautiful, man. I'm just glad to be here.
Yeah, life's beautiful pageant.
That's the magic, man.
Yeah, it really is.
All right, we're going to put Keeping It Real on the playlist for the car ride.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I might have to veto that one. Everything else I'm all in for.
Keeping It Real.
All right. Do you guys have any questions that you'd like, Wilson? Okay, I've got another Wilson. And now I'm going to have to fly off the cuff.
Okay.
Is hardcore only an American thing, or is it everywhere?
Worldwide hardcore. it is worldwide.
It certainly worldwide. Feels very American to Americans. That's for fucking sure. It's
bigger elsewhere.
100%. Bigger rooms in Europe than any hardcore band will play over here outside of, like, you know, Knock Loose, etc. Yeah. But
bigger in Japan. Probably a lot.
Japan, not the biggest rooms, but incredibly devoted listenership.
Australia?
Australia has its own scene that has
their bands got to an arena, like Parkway Drive got to arena size.
Yes.
And they were hardcore, like, you know.
Started as a metalcore act, yeah. Yeah. To answer the question, it's an unfortunate thing. I meet British people, I meet Europeans, I've met Japanese. Actually met Southeast Asians who all are U.S. hardcore aficionados, more knowledgeable than anybody here, just really, really love it. I don't meet any Americans that are as thoroughly absorbed with overseas hardcore. There was a moment where the Swedish shit
was a lot of the skit system kind of stuff, right? That like Bob loves.
Ton, like it
was a huge thing.
Huge for a minute.
That was like getting those like your boy bringing them over. It was like a fucking deal.
And Japanese, there was the Japanese.
There was a Japanese
thing,
moment, sure,
really, really big.
But that's very like
that didn't last long to me. No, I know
that side was a thing for a couple.
But
of
no,
years.
Well, so what's interesting is it kind of begat this idea, like we're now like. Yeah, like, you know, in 2000, not, I would say, most hardcore kids who are listening to the things that most hardcore kids listen to didn't know what Bastard Wind of Pain was.
Nope.
But you fast forward 3 years, more had, and you fast forward 10 years, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, that's that Japanese hardcore record.
That's like everybody's
go-to. This is the best.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's the Japanese hardcore wave was brought in and exposed a lot of people to it, and... You know, the cream rose to the surface. Some of it really, if you haven't dug into it, some of it's really good. Language barrier for many and can be a deal breaker.
With the South American stuff, it seems to be a real...
Well, I was going to get to South America because I think there's a lot there that's still kind of, you know, it's the next phase for it. But like, as people were getting into Japanese hardcore, there were also people like championing, like, "Yo, South America's got some really, really good stuff."
I mean, it's interesting. South America's the spot I know the least about because for years, what was coming out of there was kind of like the fastcore.
Yes,
they killed it at fastcore, which is not my thing. Now I think that they probably do. I mean, I'm sure they've always done everything, but I've only
you've been exposed to some of the more
I don't know. I aside from those little moments like Sweden and like the DS13 sort of like that. Yeah. Like aside from stuff like that, I don't know of too much, and those come in waves. I don't know of like
so Justice and Rise and Fall.
Sure,
kind of came in.
Justice was a thing. We don't talk about that, man.
And Justice, well, so Justice was probably the one of the better, if not the best, of the Walking Out bands of that era. And I thought about it when we were listening to Crucifix and when we were listening to Underdog for Mosh Madness. Flip from Justice, his voice is a lot like Richie, but he doesn't. He's not. You can tell he's not a. He's not as gifted. He could not go and do Into Another. We'll say that.
Sure.
So he's not as gifted, talented there, but he was going for that. But his voice also kind of echoed like a fella from Crucifix. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I was like, I never put that together before. Justice had a moment where they came over and they were playing a style of hardcore that was summarily mocked when it was done by Europeans for the most part. Yep. You know, like there were some Main Strike fans here, you know, there's some of that. But like a straightforward New York influenced straight edge hardcore. But then Justice was like, no, they're awesome. They're really good at this, and by the way, they kill live. And they came to the States and just destroyed.
I have two questions for you.
Go.
First one, do you ever think that anybody takes offense to when we say something that is manifestly true and means nothing to us?
Like we say it kind of like casually, of course this was, yeah.
You, like you just said, he's not as talented as Richie, which is undeniable, right? But like, you don't mean it as a diss. Nobody's as talented as Richie.
No, that's, and I think it, because Flip has a large Underdog tattoo on his lower arm, I think he will, will cop to that.
But it makes me curious, would either of you fellas, if somebody said that we're like, you know, something that you take pride in, like, but like, it's not, you don't think you're a genius at it.
Sure.
Like, would you take offense? I don't know if I would.
No, I would not.
Yeah,
no,
I don't think.
No,
you know?
No. Right. And especially if I had some inkling of respect towards that person and what they did.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. How dare you say I'm not better than my idol or whatever the fuck, like, yeah. Or my influence.
Yeah, if me, you, and Tom go out and start shooting baskets.
Yeah.
And we're like, damn, Tom, you got a stroke. You can really hit those shots. You got a really pretty jumper. I mean, Steph Curry has a really beautiful jumper. That's like perfect.
Yeah, if Tom's I'm better than Steph Curry.
Hey, man, what about me?
I'm going to shoot it from the locker room. Fuck all y'all.
Yeah.
And the next question, and we don't got to delete it. You can just say another time. Have we talked on air about that last Justice record?
No, we should talk about it.
Okay. Is that the thing you want to do now?
I think it's worth it. So they were going, they were trying to hit the sweet spot of a super touch sound post-hardcore, but also like trying to say, hey, we're vaguely aware of stuff that came after that too in the space.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not like Sam I Am or anything, but like trying to pull in some influences that were beyond just super touch. I know some people who love that record.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't given it honest try in a decade.
Sure. But this is the one with the borrowed vocal or with the borrowed lyrics. Is that correct?
I think so. That's right. I forgot about this part. So, yeah. What was it from? Do you remember?
I want to say it's Down by Law.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Right.
I thought it was Down by Law.
Yeah. All right, so I'm listening. Yeah.
So I don't want to tell tales out of school because I don't know any of these people. I think I've been in a room with the one fellow once because he's like a Euro staple, right? But like I'm interested.
And the one you're talking about might not have been in the band by that point, by the way.
Okay. I'm really interested in hardcore lore that I don't think there's anything bad about it. I don't think it should hurt anybody's feelings, but sometimes it does. So if I'm stepping on anybody, you guys let me know.
No, I think you're safe.
A number of line for line borrowed lyrics.
Right. And you know, it's funny because we talked about this slightly on off air about bands and artists with line for line and the line between homage and ripping.
This was by all accounts ripping. Right. But here's what's interesting about it. Yeah, Down by Law is not a band, if I've got this even right, I think it's Down by Law, but is not a band that people in your scene are going to go looking towards. But you must have known at some point those chickens were going to come home to roost, you know? So I've heard people talk about where the singer was at that might have led to that, but nothing definitive. You know what I mean? Nothing that I would feel comfortable or uncomfortable saying here, because it was all kind of like, yeah, it was just not, it wasn't a good headspace for an album and stuff like that. But like, what is that not interesting to you fellas? I think that's such an interesting thing to happen.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
I don't know.
Yeah, right. Like, I'm just going to, this sounds good. This line sounds good. Let me.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, swap some words. Make sure it's not plagiarizing, but I like the way this sounded.
I think
does it matter that it was that? No, it doesn't really matter. I was going to say, because clearly English was not first language.
Sure.
But I don't think that matters. It's by most Belgians I know speak better English than
certainly
anyone
than me,
in this room.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure that some of our Belgian listeners will write us. They probably have more insider information.
So my biggest thing was that they were shooting for a sound that's so, it's hard to nail, which is doing the right before post-hardcore sound, where it's still hardcore, but it's right there.
Yo, there's people that pull it off, like, I haven't heard the, I've only heard one of the new Higher Power songs. I don't know if they have a new album out, but the they had an earlier record that I thought was like
getting there, right?
Right in that kind of like burn sort of, you know,
a little bit of churning to it, a little bit harder parts. Yeah, sure.
So people do it, but you're right.
It's hard to nail the sound.
Very hard.
Especially if you're going more melodic or you're coming from where they were, which was like this like really tried and true, like 80s New York hardcore grooving, like some little like Youth of Today and Underdog in a Blender. And,
yeah.
You know, a little AF in there too.
Fuck, when we talked about Underdog, we did not talk about their influence on Europe, because that's the only place that I really heard it. That like,
really?
Well, that would
locking
be
out in Europe.
Yeah. Locking out in Europe. Like, yeah. Right? Like, that would be the places that you hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's something we should consider for future Mush Madness recordings is their children, the influence we see in it. I actually said this when we talked about the Underdog LP, that they ended up in this weird place that was pre post hardcore, but I don't think that record influenced any of the post hardcore stuff. That was kind of peer to it, other than you could say Into Another, but like even that,
yeah,
that's just vocally informing what Richie was doing. You're right. Underdog was a big thing for the locking out world, and I guess in Europe, but I think that was more kind of part of the same way.
It was, same
way. Which makes me wonder if
Underdog was the influence, or if Underdog was an influence on one of those bands, and then one of those bands was an influence.
No, you know what? I think there was a weird kinship. So to give to the story of this, Justice starts roughly in a similar time frame as Mental, and it was a kinship more than they influenced us or vice versa. And it was like that, like, oh my God, that dude's got this giant Underdog tattoo. And you know, it's the way.
Do you put Mental at the
top?
Not the top. Do you put Mental as the head vampire?
Yeah, no question. It's not even.
Okay.
It's not even a question.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They were they are the locking out thing. All right. Well, Wilson fell asleep and went for a ride.
We killed Wilson.
But I like all the strings we've pulled at. Are there any other random, obvious questions that you think that a 2022 hardcore kid would ask? Should they be here? And by the way, I think we're due for a third installment of this, because when I inquired with a friend, they had a bunch of suggestions, some of which I included. But I think
was this friend cosplaying as a 20-something-year-old, or was this person a 20-something-year-old?
No, they were cosplaying because they got the concept. I was like, look, basics, basic questions. And it's good because, okay, here's one for both of you. Did the SST catalog, so everything SST put out, how important was that to you?
Fucking negligible.
Tom?
More than negligible, but not as big as like Rev or anything like that for me.
So, Patrick, on top of Bad Brains, obviously, or on top of Black Flag and Minutemen, they also put out Bad Brains, Eye Against the Eye.
Yeah, so that so
which is the one I would cite as a record. I think that you
it's my favorite. Yeah, for sure. Right.
But you like Meat Puppets?
Well, that's what. So here's the thing: they have probably 5-6 records that I like or love.
Yeah, right.
But this is not. This had no cultural cachet like Rev did or Victory did. That's right. Or I mean, at least not to me in my era. Like,
no, I don't think it did.
And you know, if people told me that this meant the world to them, I would totally, you know.
But I bet you it meant the world to all those people that you just mentioned.
Yes,
like Jordan or fucking You're Tony exactly or whatever. Right. Like, it was before our time, so of course, like. It was catalog music by the time you got around.
Yes, that's accurate. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? They weren't putting out anything new that you were like, oh, shit. But, I mean, goddamn. Descendants records.
Wilson, yeah. I mean, a large part of the Descendants.
Yeah.
I mean, everything up to, I mean.
One of the interesting Sonic Youth records. Right. Oh, the Husker Du records. Come on.
Correct.
I mean.
Right. Dinosaur Jr. put stuff out on SST? Yes, they did.
Yes, they did.
You're Living All Over Me, I think it's on SST.
I think their first two. Yeah. No, they weren't. Their first couple came out on what's that on the label? But they went over to SST for a minute. If I'm 20 in 2022, I might ask Wilson Westchester would ask, why do record labels matter, and why do I hear people talk about them like that?
People are holding on to the last vestiges of their childhood.
That's a really, really good question.
I've actually heard that posed, not in this past year, but several years ago, by people being like, so, well, one, why do what record labels matter? And then two, trying to wrap their head around, like, why would that check out? And it's, and my short answer was basically like, look, it's like categorizing and grouping. It's a way for you to conveniently organize and group some stuff together.
Think of
strength
it like
the numbers too.
Think of it like playlisting before playlisting. That's the easiest way to do it. Also, Meat Puppets 2 came out in 84. That is fucking unreal to wrap your head around. That is,
yeah, dude. We missed out on Husker Du.
No, there's SST is classics on classics, man.
I think
one of the failings of SST was they didn't really care. And I mean, to me, it's a great strength in a large way. But they didn't brand. Like, it's not, are there SST? I'm going to start bootlegging fucking SST t-shirts.
Yeah.
But there's no SS. There's only a handful of SST Records t-shirt designs. You don't see them the way you see everything else.
Sure.
It's such a banging logo. It's so cool. Like, damn. And then there's a hard stop, essentially. Like, SST kept releasing records, but there's this hard cutoff, maybe 89, where it's like, oh, you put out, like, one record by Greg Ginn every 3 years, you know?
Yes. They're not interested in SST as a brand, quote-unquote.
And it's wild, because there's probably a year there where you go, oh, what bands are on SST? Oh, the Bad Brains, Descendants, Dinosaur Jr., Minutemen.
Soundgarden.
You're like, wait, what the fuck?
We should boot the Kill Bono SST shirt.
I know. That's a good one. I was thinking just like simple, maybe literal pocket tees with the SST logo above the pocket.
Yeah, I mean, that works for sure. Kinda but cool. But, yeah, but
they had some good TV. They had... There have to be people who bootleg the
Kill Bono, but then there's Don't Suck Corporate Cock SST
Records. That's
right.
The Fuck Corporate Rock or whatever it is. Like, there's a bunch of like.
Don't Suck Corporate Cock could be my life motto.
it sounds like it's ready for a tatty.
Yeah, my girlfriend will appreciate that one.
Definitely. All right,
Wilson. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, I think I've got a lot of information. I got to chew on this from you guys. I got to think about
this. Tom Wilson comes to us, and then I feel like he doesn't like.
Yeah, like he's like doing us a fucking.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's like fine.
You know, it's like, yo, bro,
come on.
I mean,
open up fucking Wikipedia. Fuck off.
You guys gave me a lot to think about. No, I'm just.
We're gonna chew about this.
I'm not too sure about this hardcore thing.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna think about this conversation again. See you guys.
Yo, do you think that ever when I'm like, you don't understand the way that Down to Nothing would look at you in the pit, and you'd know that it was just time to have fun. Do you think like a fucking 20-year-old is like, yo, this guy is senile and a creep.
Grandpa, let me get you
home. That is exactly the okay, grandma, let's get you home meme. Literally the meme. It's literally the meme.
What's the fella's name? Dave Wood? Is that right?
Yeah. Dave Wood.
Stop talking about Dave Wood's
Can we get it, bro? Like,
holy shit.
Why don't you just fucking marry the guy? Like, yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you, Wilson.
Peace.
What's up, Axe to Grind crew? This is Jesse in Bayonne giving you a pit report for the four shows I went to in March. End at St. Vitus, Dead Guy and Hot Water Music, two different shows at Crossroads in Garwood, New Jersey, and then the Glassjaw show at Union Transfer in Philly. March 4th, St. Vitus in Brooklyn was End, Portrayal of Guilt, Yashira, and Wake. I missed Yashira and Wake. Portrayal of Guilt, really like what I've heard on record, was not feeling the live show. I don't know if it was me or whatever, just people were into it. I just wasn't. End leveled the place. This was the first night of the tour. They were very excited to be out on tour for the first time since COVID hit. They've only done a few dates here and there since. They kept talking about how they were excited to finally get out on the road for real. End has been talked about on the podcast a decent amount. Not sure if everybody knows. It's somewhat of a super group. Will Putney put this group together. Will Putney is on guitar. Brendan Murphy from Counterparts sings. Gregory Thomas from Shy Elude is on guitar. Jay Pepito from Reim Supreme on bass. And now Billy Reimer from Dillinger is their drummer. It's extremely chaotic, aggressive, in-your-face, metalcore. This was my favorite album of 2020, Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face. People were super amped, huge mosh pit, just total chaos from wall to wall. There was nowhere to hide inside that room in St. Vitus. It was a war zone in there in the best possible way. Next night, Saturday, March 5th, was Dead Guy, School Drugs, and Honey at Crossroads in Garwood, New Jersey. Got there too late for Honey. Saw School Drugs. They sounded good. They were super into it. Crowd reaction was a bit muted, as you can expect. They're a younger band. The crowd at a Dead Guy reunion show is obviously much older. People just didn't really know them that well. They were excited to be opening for Dead Guy. They had some really nice things to say about being put on this show. And, you know, Shore style. That's what they sounded like. That's what they are. So if you know that, that's School Drugs. Dead Guy obviously got a huge reaction. People were so excited to finally see this band. I, and I'm sure many people there, never got to see them back in the day. So there were tons of sing-alongs, tons of crowd participation, a lot of old guy mosh going on. Everyone smiles across the board. Just a great show. They're clearly going to keep playing shows in the area. They talked about putting out some new material soon. Look forward, I guess, to more from Dead Guy coming up. Then I saw Glassjaw and Incendiary at the Philly show March 21st. It was at Union Transfer, great venue in Philly, you know, more of a traditional concert venue. Show was close to sold out. This was one of the shows where Glassjaw did both records in one night, Everything You Want to Know About Silence and Worship and Tribute in one night. It seems like the show that Tom described at Starland might have been an outlier, because this show definitely moved much faster. I'm assuming maybe because it was a Monday night, but the intermission in between the two records was only maybe about 10 to 15 minutes. They were done in under 2 hours total with both records in full. Band sounded great. Just like Tom said, Worship and Tribute got a bigger reaction than the Silence material. Daryl's voice was on and he was into it. If you're a big Glassjaw fan, you know that Daryl can be very hit or miss depending on the night. He was definitely locked in. As Tom said, he didn't really take any lyrics off, which is surprising because I've seen him just skip entire parts of songs of all their material, not just the older stuff, many times through the years. And his voice sounded really good. He nailed all of the big screams throughout the night. It was impressive. Incendiary got a pretty good reaction considering it was a Monday night in Philly opening for Glassjaw. There were a decent amount of people moshing, decent amount of people up front that knew the material and were singing along. They sounded great and the new song was really good, very heavy. I'm excited to hear the rest of the new stuff. Then I saw Hot Water Music, Strike Anywhere, and Be Well at Crossroads again on March 26th. Unfortunately, I got there too late again and I missed Be Well, which is a shame because I really wanted to check them out. I like the stuff I've heard so far. Strike Anywhere isn't my thing, but they got a great reaction from the crowd. Tons of sing-alongs. They sounded really good. And they're definitely a good band to open for Hot Water Music. Then when Hot Water Music came on, this is one of my favorite bands. I've seen them a million times. They sounded great. The crowd was super into them. But it was a weird crowd. Every time I see Hot Water Music, I feel like it's less and less people that go to shows regularly. And it's a lot more old beer dudes that are just, this is their big night out for the month. You know what I mean? A lot of guys push moshing up front with a beer in their hand. And I get it. This is a part of the culture of that band, but it's just, it's not for me. They were good, but they don't play much of the old material anymore. So if you're a longtime fan of Hot Water Music and you're looking for a lot of that stuff from the 90s and early 2000s, you're not going to really get it anymore live. The only big old song that they played is Turnstile, which is a go-to. They always play Turnstile. Still a good night, sold out show. The new Chris that replaced the old Chris as the permanent touring member. I noticed he took on more of the vocal duties this time than the last time I saw Hot Water Music in Brooklyn like 3 years ago. And yeah, that's the pit report for the four shows I went to in March. Take care.
Friends, Liam here from Cinepunks.com. I've got another pit report for you. I apologize in advance if the sound quality of this one is less than my prior ones, but that's because I'm on location in Philadelphia, PA. I'm on vacation, seeing some family, seeing some friends, doing the whole vacay thing. And while I'm here, I check out a show. 4333 Collective booked a show at the Yuki Club last night in Philadelphia. Bib, Tempter, Chemical Fix, Gel, Alien Birth. It was cool. It was a fun time. I'm going to give you the quick rundown right now. The official date of that, by the way, was March 28th. Today is March 29th. I'm recording the next day. Alien Birth. Never heard of that band. I don't know if they're new. They didn't look young, but they didn't look necessarily old either. Very much a early punk band, sounding band, like very early 80s punk with some hardcore influence. Pretty good. Kind of ripping. I will say the songs were a little long. Both the songs and the set were a little long for my taste. That doesn't, you know, that probably works for some people. For me, what I like about that style of punk is often the shorter songs, and these were not shorter songs. So apologies to you, Alien Birth, but that's not my vibe. Up next was Gel. I've never gotten to see Gel. I've been a fan for a while, ordered some merch from them during the pandemic. I like that band. One of the things I like about the band is I think the songs, though simple, are very cool, very stompy. I like the vibe. And what's great about seeing them live is I like them better live. I don't know if that's a universal opinion, but I really enjoy them live. It was a lot of fun. If I was younger and could do it, I would probably have mooshed a little bit, but I just watched. I'm sorry, guys. But it was fun. It was a good show from them. And I'm glad I finally get to see them because I've been wanting to see them for a long time and I haven't had a chance to. After that was Chemical Fix, Philadelphia's own Chemical Fix. Members of Fixation, I think, and maybe Drowse. I don't know. I don't know the bios of everybody in the band. But Chemical Fix is very much like a fast hardcore band. Reminds me of some bands from the 2000s. I don't know. I'm not an expert in this style of hardcore, so there's definitely moments that remind me of American Nightmare, but I don't think that's their only influence. But I don't know. I'm not going to – I don't want to be the one out here like throwing around band names and then someone hears it and they're like, that's not right. But they are. They're faster. They have some pretty sick breakdowns for a faster band, but they're definitely on the faster side. It's not actually usually the kind of hardcore I look to because it's it's faster hardcore, but it's not Youth Crew either. I'm sort of out of my depth here, I guess, a little bit. It's not punk is what I was going to say. Anyways, it's fun. They're a good band. I really like them live. I like them enough live that I want to listen more carefully to the record. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that I didn't dislike the record, but I wasn't in love with it. And then seeing them live, I was just really impressed. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at, is that they were really impressive live. And now I'm like, maybe I am a fan. Maybe I need to get on. I really like Fixation, and I don't think those two bands are that different. But for whatever reason, I just didn't maybe give the record enough time. Anyways, after them was Tempter, who I believe is from Richmond, maybe? I know the UK release is on Quality Control, because I saw that on Bandcamp, but I think they're from Richmond. Anyways, Tempter, listening to the record, it very much felt like Japanese hardcore, maybe even a little bit crusty. The art is very crusty looking. Seeing them live, though, it feels a little bit more like a crossover band. That's not a negative thing. Those are two, what's recorded and what's live are they sound different. Like, I really think the record sounds different than they do live as a band. But both of things are things that I like. So it's not a criticism. It's very much like, oh, this is fun. I like this. So Tempter, if you get a chance to check them out, I love the vocalist. They're very, like, it's more screechy vocals, you know, and I really like that. I don't know. I think they're sick. I think they have some heavy riffs. Again, I definitely see the Japanese hardcore influence, but I also think the riffs reminded me of some of that crossover, even like hardcore influence metal. Anyways, and then after them was Bibb, who I've wanted to see for years. I checked them out, I think, because I saw them on a lineup for Sound and Fury, and I had seen the name, but I wasn't sure. And then I checked out their releases and really liked the band, but I've never gotten to see them before. And live is like a whole other experience. If you like the Bibb records, I think you'll love them live. If you aren't sure about the Bibb records, like they're not really your flavor, I still think you should check them out live. There's just an energy there. It was a lot of fun. Crowd was going nuts. The crowd was pretty diverse last night, like in the sense that there were some, you know, Norman Corman, like more hardcore folks you would see at a more traditional hardcore show there. There were also some like fun punk type people, some people who just look like art students, some folks who just seemed like they wandered in. It was like the vibe and the aesthetic were very much all over the place. And that's perfect. I love that. That's great. I want more of that. And especially more of it where it didn't feel like there were negative vibes. Didn't feel like there was like tension in the room. It felt very relaxed and fun. And in that sense, I got to say, like, big ups to 4333 Collective, who booked the show. I like that space, the Yuki Club, Ukrainian. It's a Ukrainian society, basically. It's a sick room. Show went well. And it was great seeing some Philly folks, you know, visiting, getting to see some people at the show. Big ups to all the Philly folks who said hi to me, and, you know, it was cool catching up with people, and I love you. And, you know, big ups to the young lady who almost stole my friend Josh's coat, just put it on, started to walk around with it, didn't realize it wasn't her coat. So that's, you know, that's always fun. Anyways, it was a good time, fun show. If you live in the Philadelphia area, and extend that out, I mean the greater Philadelphia area, check out 4333 Collective. They seem to do an interesting variety of shows, some punk stuff, hardcore stuff. I think some stuff is indie rock. I mean, I respect a lot of bands that I don't even know, which is great because I'm old and irrelevant. So good for them for doing something interesting. So anyways, cool. Talk to you later.
Hi, this is Seth from Louisville, Kentucky, with a Axe to Grind pit report for LDB Fest 2022. I was only able to make it to Saturday, March 12th of the four-day event, but it was awesome. Shout out to Hate56, who recorded all 4 days of the event, and we'll have them up on his site fairly soon. First off, wanted to big shout out to Two Witnesses and Gates to Hell. They were the local bands that played that day and kicked things off and were both excellent as always. Ballista was definitely the best band that was completely new to me. I had never heard of them or seen them before, and they were excellent. MH Chaos wins the award for hardest set of the day, in my opinion. Age of Apocalypse was really good. Not entirely my bag. I don't really get with the vocals too much, but I was in the minority. Most of the room was definitely going off for them. Magnitude, for sure wins the award for audience participation. They, when they did To Whatever Fateful End, closing their set, it was the biggest pile-on I've ever seen at any show ever. Full stop. Year of the Knife definitely had the wildest front man of the day. Tyler was absolutely losing his mind. Looked like he was going to pass out. It was just hulking out the entire set. Mind Force was a personal favorite. I had never gotten to see them before, and they are one of my favorite bands going right now. So that was definitely what I was looking forward to most the whole day, and they absolutely delivered. Cannot recommend enough. God's Hate, probably wins the award for most violent set of the day. I am glad there were a few lines of people between me and the pit while that was going on. It was something to see. And then, of course, Incendiary were the headliners and capped things off for the day. And it was amazing. The whole room was going off. Everybody, in some sense or another, was there to see them, and it was great. They shouted out the festival organizers for running things so very smoothly. A lot of bands were starting 5-10 minutes early just because everything ran so well. And yeah, it was just a great time all around. Can't wait to see what they got going on next year. Shout out to the guy in the FUBU jersey who just stage diving left and right all day. He had 2 black eyes and I think a broken nose by the end of the day. Just an absolute hero. Also on a serious note, I don't know if word has gotten out super far or not, but Friday night there was an after party at a local spot called Mag Bar, and one of the folks working the door got shot in an altercation while he was on the job there. It's believed to be involved in some way with some of the folks, not local folks, but just people who were here for LDB. The only reason I bring it up. He is okay. He's alive. He's out of the hospital now. But he's got some pretty steep medical bills. And so I wanted to mention he's got a GoFundMe set up. Just get on GoFundMe and search for Skyler, Skyler, Bain, Bain. He's a good guy and didn't deserve what happened to him and could use some help right now. So if you feel like throwing some money his way, that would be great. Otherwise, thank you all, Axe to Grind, for doing what you do. It's a really good time. And shout out Kentucky Straight Edge.
Yo, what's up? Checking in for another Pit Report. It's Gabe from Boston. Today is March 29th, 2022. And I went to like 5 shows last week, albeit one of them was in a literal arena. I went to see Bad Bunny, who was like my favorite pop artist of this generation. And I'm just not going to talk about that too much other than to say that like probably the single most lit like big concert I've ever been to in my life. All right, but yeah, let's talk core now. The next day, March 23rd, 2022, I went to see the Touche Amore Vain Military Gun Scowl Tour here at the Paradise Rock Club, probably my least favorite Boston venue. Great sound, but there's a pole in the middle, you can't really pit, there's a barricade. I will say this, the all 4 bands sounded amazing. I particularly really enjoyed Ian Shelton's big room energy for the Military Gun set. I thought that was really cool. I'm like, last time I saw Military Gun was literally in like the basement of the Elks Lodge. So he's definitely got the moves and the energy to rock a big stage like that and not miss a step. Vane was insane. I definitely did something stupid during that set that if you were at the show, you probably recall it. And if you were not at the show, I don't really want to talk about it just in case my wife ends up listening to this. But yeah, they were awesome. Shout out to those guys for sure. Touche Amore have like the professionalism and tightness of like a big rock band, but they still play music that is almost entirely hardcore. The best part of their set was the encore, where we literally summoned them forth, not by chanting encore, but by doing the hand claps at the beginning of that one song, just literally going over and over until they came out and actually did the song. It was awesome. The next night I did double duty, so Drug Church and One Step Closer were playing at Sonia, which is a big club that's right next in the Middle East building in Central Square. And at the Middle East upstairs, which is obviously right next door because they're in the same building, was a death metal show with some bands I really wanted to see. So I really wanted to see Outer Heaven, Pennsylvania death metal band that was playing. the death metal show, obviously. And they were playing second, so I was like, all right, I'm going to see if I can time it, right? So I went there, and I went to see the death metal show first. I went to see Outer Heaven. There was a local opener called Wretched Inferno. I have to give a big shout-out to those kids because they're legit kids, for starters. They're, like, literally 17, 18 years old. Insanely tight, insanely heavy. I think about the kind of bands that I was even thinking of doing when I was that age, and none of them were even close to being on that level, so a really major shout-out to them. I think I told them that not only are they cooler than I was at their age, they are probably cooler than I am now. So big shout-out to those kids. Outer Heaven played an amazing set of, like, mostly new songs. I think that new record is really going to melt people's brains with how heavy and sick it is. All the songs went over big. A lot of people headbanging, moshing, good energy. And then my show hop worked out perfectly with no disrespect to the openers on the Drug Church tour, but I mostly wanted to see Drug Church and One Step Closer, and I literally walked in the room as One Step Closer was setting up. So that worked out really well for me. Apologies to Soulblind and Lurk, who I will hopefully catch some other time. But, you know, sometimes my long hair tendencies come out, even though I haven't had long hair since I was 19 years old. One Step Closer definitely played a sick set. A lot of stage dives, a lot of pitting. Drug Church really owned the show, though. You could tell it was their show. I have to give a shout-out to Pat for shouting me out, because I literally started off the stage diving when they played their first song, and I just kept diving over and over and over until I, like, kind of hurt my leg. And then I had to stop. But at that point, everybody else got the memo and the set was totally lit. People just diving left and right. That show was notable for being the first time in 7 years of going to shows that the head of security of the Middle East, shout out to the Wizard, has ever given me a reprimand or a talking to. But I guess I have to go off for the homie Pat. You know, I had to do it big for him. I think the other thing that Pat said that was funny about that show is I think Pat said I have the dubious distinction of being the only person to ever stage dive to Drug Church while wearing a District 9 hoodie. So, I don't know. That's funny, I guess. Softest New York hardcore enthusiast might still be the craziest stage diver at the Drug Church show. We don't, you know, something to think about, I guess. And then last but certainly not least, me and a buddy of mine got in the car Saturday morning, Saturday, March 26th, and we rode down to the From Within Records showcase, which was also Eco Strike's last show. The lineup was Eco Strike. I'm going to pull it up, actually, just so I don't forget anybody. The lineup was Eco Strike, Magnitude, Payback, and it was also their record release. And let's see, there's Shackled, Simulacra, Worn, Seed of Pain, who did like a triple split set with Envision and Search for Purpose as surprise guests. They each played two songs, and Seed of Pain went up and played a full set. Burning Strong, Almighty Watching, Off the Tracks, and Beskar, who also did a split set with Statement of Pride. Now, I ended up missing Statement of Pride and Beskar because we had, you know how it is, hit traffic on the way. You always hit traffic in New York and Connecticut, so we did not make it in time for those two bands. So I'll just talk about the bands that I did see. Off the Tracks was the first band I caught. Fast, kind of heavy, very hard, hardcore. Covered Killing Time to close out the show, to close out the set. That was awesome. Almighty Watching. You know, everybody says they sound like Burn. I tend to agree. I think that they have, like, a very big, like, Gavin Van Black energy with their guitar playing. So I think they're sick. Burning Strong is, like, melodic hardcore, but a bit on the heavier side than a lot of the other bands doing melodic hardcore. So you can, like, still mosh to them. It's pretty sick. Envision was a fun surprise. I really like that band. Search for Purpose was also a fun surprise. Seed of Pain was the set I was most excited for, and I think it showed because I got somewhat injured during their set. I sliced my hand open on the monitor grill, and I also got a bloody lip towards the end, and my lip is actually still swollen a couple of days later, so hope there's nothing wrong there. Probably not. But yeah, Seed of Pain was awesome. They sounded amazing. They opened with the Integrity cover, Judgment Day. And they were the only band all day to get an encore request because they didn't play Hardcore Pride. And as they were breaking down the set afterwards, people kept yelling for them to play Hardcore Pride. So then they played Hardcore Pride and people lost their minds, including myself. I was bleeding actively for like the majority of the Seat of Pain set, and I still kept pitting before I saw medical attention. That's Hardcore Pride right there, slash stupidity. So there's that. Unfortunately, that kind of sidelined me for the rest of the day because I had to get my hand bandaged by the triage man, Joe Hardcore MD. I still watched all the other sets. I just kind of had to rein it in because I did not want to get further injured and potentially have to actually go to a hospital if I like tore my hand, cut a little bit open more, or get an infection. So I watched Warn from the back. They sounded great. I've always enjoyed that band. I think that they do something that's pretty unique, and the fact that they have such heavy, heavy parts while still sounding like a fast punk band the rest of the time. Simulacra opened with a cover of Time Ends by Marauder, and they actually played the whole song, which major props to them, because a lot of bands only cover the intro, and it was probably the sickest Marauder cover I've ever seen in my life. Their other songs, including their new songs, also popped off real, real big, and I love that band. I think that they are so sick. Shout out to their guitarist, Xavier, who I always talk to on Instagram, and his rap project, X Kubrick, which he does the beats and the rhymes for. It is insanely sick. Shackled is another band I watched from the back. I've seen them before, actually, in a really small room in Boston, and I gotta say, seeing them on their home turf was really sick. Close to their home turf, they're a New Jersey band. They definitely play like that hard, heavy sound. I think that it's interesting that Greg from the Mongoloids did guest vocals for them during their set, because I think they have a little bit of Mongoloids in their sound, in their DNA, as a lot of Jersey bands do. Payback, what can I say? I've wanted to see Payback for a long time. I've been a fan of theirs from the jump. A lot of people that I know do not like Payback. I think that, you know, all no disrespect to anybody, but I think that if you don't like this band, you just maybe don't like fun, because their energy is just so much fun. A lot of big sing-alongs, a lot of fun pit parts, you know. They have a good stage presence, which I think is something that goes a long way in hardcore. And just like I said, the songs are just fun to like bounce around to. You bounce around and sing along to. Even if you don't know the words, you can just bounce around to them. It's a good band. I like them. I like Payback. Magnitude was the second to last band. And I hate to say it, I think they sold the show, because they have been touring pretty heavily up until this point, and I think they're going to slow down now, but I think they have left their impact with all those tours, because people went off for them in a big way, big, big way. I was watching from the front, but also off to the side. First time I've ever seen Magnitude, and I didn't pit or dive because of my the big cut on my hand, so that was a bummer. But they sounded so good, and it was put such a smile on my face to see kids give them such a big reaction. Eco Strike came up and played a great last set. I really liked seeing the songs from the new LP that came out over the pandemic live. That was definitely a treat, although I kind of wish that they had played that one song a better way, the one about veganism that has a mosh part that sounds almost exactly like Blistered by Strife, so you never know. You know, that's never a bad thing. But you know, maybe we can convince them to do a reunion show in 5 to 10 years. We'll see what happens, right? Knock on wood. But no, if that was the last time I ever see Eco Strike, I think that I'll be happy with that, just because they really did play such a great set. They had a good energy throughout the whole set. People popped off for the new songs. People popped off for the old songs that they knew. And they played like a short and sweet set. I want to say they only played like 8 songs, maybe like 25, 30 minutes. So no big craziness, like last show, we're milking this kind of vibe. They're just like, hey, we are a hardcore band. We're going to play a hardcore band set, and then we're going to dip. And I love that. I think it's very emblematic of what they were like as a band. They were never about any flexing or stupidity or bullshit. They were just like, we are a vegan, straight-edge hardcore band. Take it or leave it. And yeah, that was that's pretty much it. I went to, like I said, I went to a lot of shows this last week, and that's the highlight reel. I apologize that this was lengthy, but I did just kind of do like a quadruple pit report. So yeah, thank you guys for listening, and catch you all later, hopefully.